Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, celebrating 30 years as local hearing healthcare professionals. With a practice featuring 5 doctors of audiology, including 2 who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient. They believe those personal partnerships are how people embrace hearing technology and keep hearing the most important sounds of their lives. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's public media. Retirements have accelerated in the last year. The pandemic has also closed businesses, cut hours, and put workers at risk of contracting the virus. Dana Vollmer reports on the retirement trend and what people should consider before deciding to exit.
Millions of baby boomers leave the workforce each year. The financial toll of the pandemic is nudging many out the door. On average, about 2 million people retire annually. The Pew Research Center reports this year that figure is already more than 3.2 million. Mike Seaborg is an economics professor at Illinois Wesleyan University. He says that's a major reversal in the prior trend of delaying retirement.
The baby boom generation has not been a great generation of savers over the years. And so quite a large percentage of folks, as they near retirement age, find themselves with low savings or no savings at all, and then having to rely on pensions and mostly on Social Security. That discourages earlier retirements.
He notes Social Security payments increase at a rate of about 8% per year. This is an incentive to work until 70. Plus, Medicare eligibility doesn't kick in until 65. That means those who retire younger are on the hook for insurance for themselves and potentially a younger spouse. Seaborg says from an investment perspective, now is not a great time to retire for most people. He says they have to weigh other factors like job loss and health risk, many they don't control. Seaborg himself just retired. He says the COVID-19 pandemic was not a factor in his decision. But the coronavirus did play into Illinois State University President Larry Dietz's decision to retire. Dietz says reflecting on lessons from the pandemic contributed to his decision to step down next summer.
I've learned, I think, about perhaps being more grateful. I'm very grateful now, particularly for my health and that of my family, friends, and colleagues, and grateful for the freedoms that we've are being a little restricted now in terms of, you know, moving around and all those kinds of things. But those are freedoms that a lot of other people in a lot of other places don't have.
That, coupled with a half-century career in education, brought Dietz to his decision to step down in June. Others are turning to professionals to evaluate their options. Suzanne Kosick is a financial advisor with Edward Jones in Bloomington.
We definitely have had a lot more client engagement this year, as well as prospective clients reaching out. So people who are approaching retirement and have these decisions to make. Do I stay working? Do I retire? Putting those pieces together to understand what's important to them, and then do they have the funding to be able to do that?
Kosick says some were furloughed, others have been permanently laid off, and others still are just scared to go to work for fear of putting themselves or families at risk. She says those within a couple of years of retirement age are usually looking at how much they've saved, their spending habits, and adjusting their investment strategy to match their goals and risk tolerance. But those that are further away from retirement, say 5 or 10 years, have more significant financial questions to weigh, including the tax implications of pulling out retirement savings early. IWU's Mike Seaborg says a better option may be to take some time away from work with the intention of returning before retirement.
I think it's better to, if you experience a job loss and you're getting near retirement age or at retirement age, is to really sit back and think about whether you're financially ready for that yet or emotionally ready. And for many of us, it might be better to just take a sabbatical and then consider reentering the workforce again and retire at a more sensible age financially.
He says that also applies to those who were laid off. Seaborg notes employers could benefit from early retirements.
A lot of senior workers are jumping at the opportunity as well to take a buyout or maybe a phased retirement possibility as employers try to reduce labor costs. And older workers are more costly than younger workers. And so there's an incentive for them to do that.
Still, Seaborg cautions against a hasty decision because of emotion or job loss tied to the pandemic. As with any big life change, he says people should think it through. I'm Dina Vollmer.
This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Town of Normal staff are drafting a potential ordinance creating $250 fines for businesses that willfully disobey state COVID mitigation guidelines. There are currently three such businesses in the town of Normal. The town has known for a while there was little existing authority to curb that behavior. Mayor Chris Koos addresses the question why it took so long for elected officials to ask for potential regulation.
Well, I think understanding what kind of authority and who had authority to do this, you know, there was a lot of back and forth in terms of who should be enforcing the governor's guidelines. The governor said the locals should do it. Working with the IML and others, we were finding out that we didn't really have any authority to do that. Even though the governor told us to do that, that it was up to local officials to enforce, we didn't have any statutory authority to do that. And working with the IML, we kind of came up with some what you'd call model ordinance ideas and put those into an ordinance, which hasn't really been fully written yet, to be clear.
Now, you've known, though, for several months that there were scoff laws, people not obeying the mitigation rules.
Well, I wouldn't say for several months, Charlie. Come on now. We have known for a while. I will give you that. Let me just say that we tried, before we did any ordinances, we tried to work with the people who weren't complying. And for the most part, we've had success. By and large, almost all the businesses in our community are complying.
You've known, though, for months, and yes, it has been months, that there was a great disparity in how people approached these mitigations. I guess I want to ask, why didn't you at least do the research earlier?
That's probably a fair question, but we were taking our time with it. We were doing our due diligence, and we were trying to work with people to encourage them to do the right thing instead of coming in with a heavy hand and forcing issues on people.
Where do you think the council is on this? Will there be enough support even to put it to the test?
You know, I can't say that people are going to vote for an ordinance that no one's seen. I can tell you that I thought last night's work session that a majority of the council were leaning to do something, yes.
What message would you have for those who are still viewing the mitigation rules as an unacceptable intrusion into individual liberties?
We're going to continue to encourage them to voluntarily honor the Restore Illinois guidelines. They are at risk of infecting people, of making people sick. As Councilman McCarthy said, last night, some of these restaurants employ people that work in multiple restaurants, and compliant restaurants doing takeout, a couple of them, have had to close because their employees working in one of these non-compliant restaurants popped up COVID positive and forced a compliant restaurant who was doing takeout and delivery to close for 5 days.
What are the latest developments from your think tank of community stakeholders that is the COVID task force?
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since we've met. We kind of got a heads up from the medical community that trouble was coming our way in terms of increased positivity in the community, a lot having to do with people traveling and people having small gatherings in their homes with friends and family. At the time, restaurants had just been closed.
What's on the agenda for the next meeting, and when will that be?
There's no scheduled time on that. I think probably in another week and a half, we'll meet. I think I want to see if we have the suspected Thanksgiving travel bounce that's being projected.
What would you like to tell people about Christmas?
The same thing that we have talked about and the CDC and Dr. Fauci has talked about Make your Christmas intimate this year. You're very close family. You can visit with people digitally and that, but please don't travel, and please keep your gatherings to people that you're around day to day in your family.
Chris Coos is the mayor of Normal. The mayors of both Bloomington and Normal join us the day after most city council meetings on Sound Ideas. State lawmakers returned to Springfield in January, staring down a change in House leadership, the economic fallout of the pandemic, and unfinished business interrupted by COVID-19. Dana Vollmer talks with State Representative Dan Brady about what's most urgent when the General Assembly reconvenes.
Obviously, some of the positives that were occurring have been torpedoed by COVID. And some of those positives were related to the budget. Now we find ourselves in a situation to where the governor's talking about what needs to be done, and I agree from the standpoint of cuts, belt tightening, looking within ourselves first before there's any other talk of revenue in this state. And that's going to be budget related. So I think what we go back to, the priority, will be budget and budget-related situation, trying to right the ship, which is going to take a period of time, and we just can't rely on the federal government to bail us out in Illinois.
What do you think we're going to need to do to balance that budget?
Well, I think you're going to need to do a lot of things that have been talked about over the years, primarily by our caucus. You're going to have to look at not only the cuts, look at the operations of state government, the necessities, the priorities, which I've said numerous times should be public safety, public infrastructure, and public education. Those should be our priorities, and we could follow those priorities. That'd be a start. The other aspect of what we're going to do is look at things that we can help businesses with. Businesses have been not only devastated with COVID of recent, but prior to that, from the regulation standpoint and the taxation standpoint. And so looking at what type of legislative help there can be to make business be able to come back is going to be very, very important and a priority as well. So I think that combination, and it all ties to something called the budget.
And Governor Pritzker has said, due to the failure of the graduated income tax amendment, that they're likely going to need to be cuts in some of the areas that you just named as priorities, so public education and public safety. How do you spare those cuts?
Well, you do it, in my opinion, you do it really coming in with more of a surgical scalpel than you do trying to bring a chainsaw in. And that surgical scalpel has to look at programs and the necessity of those programs in this time frame of which we find so many challenges. What are we getting for the amount of money we're putting out into grants into different communities and cities? Get back to the basics of what we are responsible for under the Constitution of the state of Illinois and the operations of state government, and get out of the business of where state government finds its tentacles in so many areas where it doesn't belong, and we just have to set those priorities.
And so Illinois Republican Party leader Tim Schneider just announced he's stepping down. I'm curious what you'd like to see from the next person at the helm of the state GOP.
Well, I think that the state GOP needs, in some respects, obviously a change. A change not only in the faces of what people think of in the way of party chair, but I think it's time that ideas from women that have been involved in the political process and campaigns and the Republican platform of so many things, minority, representation, I think, would be very good. And I think those type of characteristics are going to be important. And I think probably a fresh face with new ideas in a way that our tent is going to be able to bring more insight. Because there's one thing where you can find common ground, and that's usually when it affects people's pocketbooks and financials. And many people can agree on one thing, and that is that they want to see the state turned around in the way that it operates from a financial standpoint. And that, I think, crosses the lines of parties.
And there's also a leadership transition happening at the federal level. What do you make of President Trump's response to the election results?
Well, I think that the thinking through a recount myself when I first ran for office, and knowing that the individuals, you have a right to those when it falls within certain jurisdictions of what the vote totals are in certain areas. But once those are exhausted, it's time to, I believe, to have a peaceful transfer of power, a transfer of power that restores confidence from the standpoint that government of the people, for the people, and by the people is just that, for the people. And that's what's got to be reinstalled and reiterated here in all the different turmoil that's been going on since the November 3rd general election.
That's Republican State Representative Dan Brady of Normal. He spoke with Dana Vollmer. To hear the full conversation, go to WGLT.org. A Central Illinois opera singer has won a prestigious singing competition. Kate Tombaugh topped 155 other mezzo-sopranos in the Mildred Miller International Competition. WGLT student reporter Katrina Peterson talks with Tombaugh about the competition and making a life in music during a pandemic.
Kate Tombaugh is a native of Streeter. She graduated from Illinois Wesleyan University and has been competing and winning competitions for some time now. Tombaugh says the competitions are a great way to put yourself in front of people who don't know anything about you as a performer.
Throw yourself out there and see what other people, how other people perceive your talents and your level of development. And in this particular case, it was really, really such a huge boost.
How much does a competition track record and reputation matter?
You will talk to some really, really fantastic, well-known professional singers who will tell you that they never won competitions. And that's maybe not completely true, but in general, winning competitions doesn't necessarily directly correlate to a successful career, but it's yet another way to network. It's another thing that when we add it to our resume, it makes people's eyes perk up and maybe even get us into the door for an audition that we might not normally be able to get if we didn't have certain accolades on our resume and in our experiences.
You were the only finalist from the Midwest. Much of opera happens on the coast. How does one craft a career from a central Illinois home base?
It just really wasn't on my radar as something that was possible that I could do. I have performed professionally all across the country, but really when I think about my ultimate goal, it hasn't changed even from when I was 23, 24. I love being based in the Midwest, and this is very much where I want to be and where I want to help improve and be a part of the scene, because there is a lot more than we think there is sometimes. I actually run a nonprofit music training program in my hometown of Streeter for young high school-aged musicians.
There are politics in all walks of life. Do politics in the singing world affect who wins voice competitions?
I tend to kind of take the high positive road whenever I start to maybe wonder or about those types of things. But ultimately, the goal is that has no bearing on who wins and that those who are the most talented. In terms of getting jobs, that's a very different story. And it's true, too, just for the panel on a competition panel, because we're just humans. So even if we try to be unbiased, we can't help but be biased. I'm very lucky that I have some programs and training in my background that give me enough of a stature as a singer that people at least give me a listen. It is challenging because I am still currently self-managed, and that's mostly by choice, really. But not having somebody in there who is regularly working with a company and continuously putting out visibility and promotions and all these things for you, it is an uphill battle that way.
Early in the pandemic, there was a horrific example of a chorus that rehearsed when one person was positive. Nearly all of the singers caught COVID and some died. Singers put out a lot of air. How can they perform and be safe?
There's an orchestra that I work with regularly in Glen Ellyn, Illinois, at the College of DuPage at the Mechanich Arts Center. And in September and October, I recorded two concerts with them. We were outside and completely distanced, and everyone was masked, including myself, and mic'd. And we recorded a holiday concert, which is going to be live streamed starting next weekend. and an opera and Broadway concert. I'm really impressed and grateful to the organizations that are taking a leap of faith. They're working overtime, not as much money to be had right now, and I know people are struggling.
A vaccine is coming. When do you think performances for mass audiences will begin again?
I'm actually slated to sing in Bloomington, the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, in April, and I know that they are in current conversations about that and figuring out everything they can do. I did just recently hear from a company that I'm singing an opera with in Virginia that they're postponing again. I'm still making a point of collaborating on a regular basis with contacts and colleagues from across the country, and we're just figuring out things in a new platform.
What will help the field recover?
Part of our existence in the arts is knowing that we've always been on the chopping block. I mean, it's just a reality of our existence. Whenever things get tight, arts is always the first thing to go. It's really unfortunate. You can't quantify how important it is to everybody. But I feel like with challenges like this, if people can sustain, and if for those that can help out, you know, their favorite arts organizations, please do. But I think with growing pains like this, if people can sustain, it's really teaching us a lot.
Central Illinois native Kate Tomba is the winner of the Mildred Miller International Singing Competition. Her most recent engagements include singing with Chicago Opera Theater in the world premiere of Freedom Ride. That celebrates the hundreds of young volunteers who risked their lives to desegregate interstate travel in 1961. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Katrina Peterson.
Kate Tomba is also an Illinois Wesleyan University graduate. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.